It's Celtics coverage on clnsradio.com.
Sensational move from Kyrie Irving. Oh, Hayward. Crawford lays it up and in.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll free, 347-215-7771.
I should have played Geno time. I had the option to, but I won't. I'm taking this one with a dose of humbleness. I didn't even start off with the woo. I could have. But the game will speak for itself. The score will speak for itself. Celtics win 108-83. They led by 29 twice tonight. Or this afternoon. Excuse me. And they have a 1-0 lead in the Eastern Conference Finals. We were sitting here 1 year ago mourning a 50-point loss. It was 50 points at one point in that game. Now here we are in a game that the Cavaliers never had a chance in from the opening moments. Marcus Morris picked up 2 quick fouls in this one. It looked like LeBron was going to have his way with him early, but it completely turned the other way after that. Makes a quick bucket after Brad Stevens kept him in the game, and it was off to the races from there. A onslaught for the Celtics defensively. I'm not even going to praise their offense for this one. Their offense was great today. It was 60% through the first half and ends 51%. But wow, did they shut off the Cavaliers' offense. We're going to ask you tonight, the callers, and I'm going to ask my sidekick here, or my sidekick's the wrong word, my co-pilot here, Nick, in just a minute. Was this LeBron James' worst game ever at TD Garden? Let me read you the stat line tonight, because LeBron James disappeared from this game in the fourth quarter. He completely laid his arms down and went on to the next night. Minus 32 for LeBron James, a 15-9-7. So he was pushing the triple-double with turnovers, 7 turnovers in this one, 0-5 from 3. The Cavaliers are 4 of 26 outside. So reason for optimism. And reason for a pause going forward, too, because the Cavaliers shooters had looks in this one that they weren't making. But LeBron completely laid a duck in Boston tonight. 15 points in 36 minutes for a guy averaging 34 in this postseason. Here's my first takeaway before we get to Nick on this one. Everyone who was on Twitter, and I hate doing this, but I have to do it for this. Everyone making fun of Marcus Morris coming into this series. They weren't doing it because he stunk up the joint in the last series, and he was terrible against Philadelphia. That's not why people were making fun of Morris coming into this one. They were making fun of Morris because he said before this series, he thinks he's one of the best guys to stand in front of LeBron. Didn't even say shut down LeBron, just said guard LeBron. Put himself up there with Kawhi Leonard. He didn't even call himself the best. He said he was one of the best. And everyone starts laughing and crying online, going crazy. And look what happened tonight. LeBron James is shut off in Boston. To the point where he was standing in the backcourt complaining about a call when Terry Rozier was going full court and laying one down to Horford. And how about Al Horford, the guy who can't get it done against Cleveland? Let's read his stat line. 8 of 10, 20 points, 4 rebounds, and 6 assists. For Al Horford, who set a vicious tone early in this one, going at Kevin Love. Kevin Love had 2 fouls within the first 5-6 minutes of this game. He was completely taken out of the fold. Blocked in the right corner by Horford. Blocked inside by Jaylen Brown. But I'm going to give Marcus Morris the player of the game. 7 of 12, 21 points, 10 rebounds, plus 25. Completely dominated the matchup with LeBron. He was the primary defender on him, and he held him to nothing tonight. What did we say coming into the series? You weren't going to be able to shut off LeBron. You just had to manage him. Keep him to 30 points. Keep him to 40 points. Just shut off the other guys, and you probably win this. Now, that would have been true today. The Celtics won by so much, but they not only shut off the other guys, they shut off LeBron James, too. So here we go. I have 2 hosts with me tonight. Snotty Jippin, Nick Sesento. We're going to have a 3-man team going all night long, but your number is 347-215-7771. Let me bring in Nick here to get his topic he wants to discuss, because I am all over Al Horford. I am all over Marcus Morris's resurgence, fired up to play in the series. Brad Stevens put him in the starting lineup, and he was good to go. Maybe that's the key. Maybe you got to start Morris to get him engaged, get him going. We're going to keep that rolling going forward. But first, Mack Weldon is what you want to wear. Let me tell you, they make sure all your basics and beyond as far as clothes go are smartly designed, and shopping for them is easy. This isn't a department store. This is an online, simple, concise shop to get your clothes. They want to find out how to make more of their basics. So essential, but it's not a pain in the ass to buy. So the frustration was real for them, and they had their eureka moment in a department store aisle full of brands. Surrounded by a mind-numbing assortment of underwear and socks, they realized consistent fit and quality can be a game of roulette. So they are making it simple for you to get what you want to wear. Mack Weldon, let me tell you the name again, is a premium men's essentials brand that believes in smart design and premium fabrics. Not only does Mack Weldon's underwear, socks, shirts look good, they perform well too. No questions asked. So, for 20% off your first Mack Weldon order, MackWeldon.com. Go check out what they got. Underwear, shirts, socks, pants, everything you can imagine. Simplified. Enter the promo code CLNS at checkout and you're going to get 20% off your first order at checkout. That's MackWeldon.com. Nick Sesento is with me here. Snotty is with me as well. Let's start off with Nick since he's been waiting for a minute. We got Snotty here as well. Three-man team. I didn't want to do it. Nick's going to do it. That was his button. That was his hand on the button there.
That's right. Woo! I'll press the button if you're not going to. Geno time in the Garden. Game one. Boston Celtics. What was it? 25-point win over the Cleveland Cavaliers. Yeah, you got to love it. And you know what? I cannot wait to turn on First Take tomorrow, to turn on First Things First tomorrow, to turn on Undisputed tomorrow and listen to Shannon Sharp explain to Skip why he was so wrong about LeBron James, who led his team tonight in assists, blocks, and turnovers. He didn't even carry his weight in rebounds or in points. All due to the Boston Celtics' incredible defense.
And here's what stunned me, too. You know, I knew they had a number of guys you could throw at them. Semi Ojeleye, Marcus Morris, Jaylen Brown. We knew those three guys were going to be up for the challenge, at least standing in front of them. But Jason Tatum had his way with him a little bit. Jason Tatum was poking those long arms around him, knocking him off the ball in the post. He cut him off a few times. I think he forced two or three of the seven turnovers. There might be something there with that Lane Tatum. And I know I was talking to Justin, our good friend Justin, over at Fear the Sword there, the Cavaliers writer. And he was saying, you know, LeBron's not a coach. He's not a coach. You can't throw three, four guys on him. That's not the way to do it. Well, I think that's what did it today. You had just a number of fresh bodies rotating onto him and making it happen and getting into him physically. There was just physical supremacy being played on him. And these guys aren't bigger, faster bodies than him, but they are up to the challenge.
I want to say right now, LeBron James will not be that passive again. We know we didn't see prime LeBron James tonight. LeBron was like a boxer doing the rope-a-dope in the first round. And I'm not saying, hey, the defense was amazing. So I'm not saying he just let them do anything. But he took what the defense gave him, which was nothing. And, you know, he didn't try to take over the game. But even if he did, the defense was ready. So, but you nailed it, man. The defense was just on point. They just made sure that what the Raptors did was they would overreact. They were either sending crazy doubles at them, and then the rotating guys behind him, you know, behind the double team, they were slow rotation, leaving guys open. Boston doesn't do that, right? Boston knows what they're supposed to do, so everyone knows exactly what their job is. When I think late in the game, we all saw he tried to find a cutting Kyle Korver, and Baines saw it coming. Baines sniffed it out and stole the pass because that's what the Celtics do. The Celtics trust each other. They believe in each other. They know where they're supposed to be. They know that's their job. They don't play around like the Raptors did. Raptors kept giving Kyle Korver and Kevin Love wide-open three-pointers. It was so frustrating because you would see, like, how are they wide open? It's Kyle Korver. Boston says, yeah, exactly, this is Kyle Korver. We're not doing that. So you're right, absolutely. Boston said we're gonna make LeBron see a crowd. We are going to single up when we can, and then guess what? We're gonna get back to the shooters. So even when they put Boston to the rotation, it didn't matter. They weren't just getting wide open shots because Boston was in rotation. This was a virtuoso performance by the Boston Celtics. I can say that, you know, all they've had some great games this year, comebacks against the Rockets, against the, you know, down 22 or whatever against Philly, and they came back and win this playoff. This has been the best performance on both sides of the ball by the Celtics probably all season. And They made it look workmanlike. They didn't do anything spectacular. That's the crazy thing. They just played man-to-man smart defense. They switched selectively. They didn't switch everything. But they were like, all right, well, you're not going to beat us, though. And, obviously, there's a couple breakdowns, right? We saw Kevin Love get a couple first-half dunks. Clarkson and Rodney Hood did a little something, one-on-one ISO, and got and-ones. Sure. But for the most part, I'll say, 90% of the night, Boston just played their defensive plan to absolute perfection. And the Cavaliers just had no counters. Ty Lue has to go back to the drawing board. LeBron James has to be more aggressive. And they got to find another ball handler who can actually do something off the bounce. Because otherwise, we know LeBron won't be this bad again. But this was just one – like, this is a – this makes the fact that Brad Stevens did not get a single vote from the other coaches – this makes it even funnier to me. And it shows that something else is going on in the coaches. And we don't even care about that right now, right? I don't.
We're going to talk about the defense a lot tonight. I actually thought the offense was interesting. But I'll ask you guys right off the bat here, starting with Nick. Was this the worst LeBron James game ever at the Garden? Whether it was him, Snotty thinks he was floating a little bit, just taking an easy game one. Maybe that was it, but I think that says a lot about him, too, the way he just seemed to throw away that fourth quarter. But I don't remember him just being this off ball, this offhand, this passive even in Boston. This is where he thrives. Like, this is his, like, second home. This is where he's dominating in the playoffs, at least going back to 2011. And he had nothing tonight, nothing at all.
No, you're mistaking Boston for LeBronto, and Boston is not LeBronston or whatever they want to call it. It's not LeBronto, and whether or not this is his best game in the Garden, I don't know, because I don't pay that close attention to LeBron James and his invented stats to make him look better than another certain player that retired two decades ago. I don't care about LeBron's best game in the Garden. All I care about is whether or not the Boston Celtics win. And they won tonight. There were a lot of experts that were talking about whoever wins game one is probably going to win the series, all thinking that Cleveland Cavaliers were going to sneak this game one from the Boston Celtics at TD Garden. No way. The Boston Celtics won. I wonder if those same experts are going to say the same thing after the Cleveland Cavaliers lost game one tonight. I don't think so. So whether or not LeBron James' best game, I don't know. Ask Snotty. He probably knows.
was it one of his worst games? It's definitely – So I'm not going to let him off the hook, right? I'm not saying he was disinterested. Obviously, I'm going to say this though: we did see how hard he had to work in the first round, and how hard he kind of, even though second round against the Raptors was like it seemed a little more low effort, he still had, those shots are hard shots to make. And so, hey man, guess what? LeBron's still in year 15, and it's been a long season. And I'm not saying he's gassed. Not saying that at all. I think we have at least one or two or three, a couple more good. We're going to see a LeBron explosion in this series. We know that, where he gets on a roll and he starts doing things. It's coming. I thought it might have came in the third quarter. When they cut it down to 14 at the end of the third. I thought maybe we were in for a big LeBron James fourth quarter. The Celtics said, nah, scored quick seven points to start the fourth, push that away, right? This is what we're seeing: a coach and a staff and a team that is prepared for everything that the Cavaliers have done, which means this is a well-prepared team. There's nothing like I'm watching off ball too. I'll tell you off ball. They run this play where Kyle Korver screens off ball. The guy he screened for might turn a screen for him. They run some nice stuff, right? Every single thing they try to run, the Celtics are right there just snuffing it out. So they end up with a contested J.R. Smith three or Kevin. Look, my favorite thing in this game, and something for you guys to watch, all the listeners out there from here on out, they would switch Terry Rozier. They'd force a switch and get Terry Rozier on Kevin Love, right? While the guy was trying to pass the ball to Kevin Love, Jaylen Brown was coming across that baseline, or Baines coming across that baseline, or Marcus Morris coming across that baseline, and they were switching as the ball was in the air. It surprised Kevin Love that one time he ended up shooting a crazy, silly little fadeaway off the baseline and missed it. They just there is no advantage other than LeBron James in the house right now for the Cavaliers. You know,
yeah.
And the Cavs just were not prepared for, I mean, like even LeBron James, he had Terry Rozier in the post, and guess who came on the baseline? As the ball's in the air, LeBron James tries to catch it and flip it real quick to the cutter. Jaylen Brown's right there, tips the ball, turnover, ball the other way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? LeBron James causes chaos because he collapses your defense. Boston's not letting him do that because they're prepared for everything. Last thing I'll say, this exposes exactly how much LeBron James is in Toronto's head and how, even though, Dwayne Casey's a good coach, he did some good things, you can't tell me that they lack the athletes to at least rotate off the ball and not leave Kyle Korver open. And, you know what I'm saying? It's Kyle Korver. He's not that athletic. So this shows you the difference between a good team in Toronto and an absolute elite defense like Boston.
There's a mental game you're playing with LeBron, too, and we've known that for years. And that's why I think people felt good about Boston last year, even though it wasn't something to feel good about. And then even back in 2015 when the Celtics were clearly brutally undermanned in that series. Some people even felt good about Boston competing in that series, even though they never did, because we know under Stevens, this team doesn't have any lack of confidence. And these idiots on Twitter, the headlines about Morris saying he was ready to stand in front of LeBron, they took it so far out of proportion, first of all. And then second of all, what's wrong with saying it? What's wrong with at least trying to convince yourself to believe it, that you can beat LeBron, that you can stand in front of him and defend him? That's what you need. Like, we're laughing at Toronto for getting blown off the court mentally, and now we're laughing at Marcus Morris for saying he thinks he's capable of doing it. Well,
I'm being real quick with that, too, because this is what pissed me off about that whole narrative. All right, so let's say me and you and Nick, we decide – we're going to chop down a tree that's 40 feet around, right? Right? It's a giant tree. Impossible task, basically. And I'm bigger than you guys. I'm 7 foot. I'm bigger and stronger than you guys. I say I'm the best to chop down this tree. All right. That doesn't mean I'm an expert and this tree's gonna fall in three chops. It just means I'm the best option. That's all Marcus Moore said. He said, I feel like guard LeBron better than most guys in the league besides Kawhi, which means, and then he said right after that, no one's stopping him one-on-one. So did everybody jump to go from what he said to, oh, my God, he said he's a LeBron stopper? That's stupid. All he's saying is, I'm big enough. I'm going to – I stay in front of him. I make him work. That's all he's saying. And so when people turn that into that – and then I guess even the cherry on the top is tonight he did exactly what he said he was, and, you know, LeBron had the night he had. But I hate the fact that people try to generate narratives and jump to – from they don't go from A to B to C. They go from A to F. Just, you know, jumping. So, whatever, man. And like you said, though, even if he came out and said, I'm going to stop LeBron, you're right. Don't be scared of LeBron. The Raptors are scared of LeBron. They're terrified of LeBron. Okay, sorry, that was my rant.
But you know what? Those narratives, it's so easy to start those narratives online, especially on Twitter. I think a lot of times, and it's the same thing with, you know, it used to be talk radio, everybody, you know, terrestrial talk radio, everybody got upset about, oh, no, Felger and Maz or, you know, Toucher and Rich said something stupid again. Now it's Twitter, and these things are, like, coming from, I know there's credible sources on Twitter, a lot of them, and that's where a lot of people get a lot of good information. But there's also, like, millions of fan trolls that are out there with, you know, disposable spam bot accounts that will just perpetuate. It's like an echo chamber. So, you know, one small story that, or one little tidbit or one excerpt that gets taken up by, you know, Brian Windhorst or somebody like that and tweeted out, then gets, you know, magnified a million times by all these LeBron stans and these Cleveland Cavaliers, you know, bandwagon fanboys that just magnify that. So, you know, I'm not the biggest Twitter guy, so I don't put as much into Twitter, but I think in the same thing, you know, I follow some of the Instagram Cavaliers pages or Celtics pages and watch the Cavaliers people come over and talk trash on some of the more established Celtics pages and vice versa and stuff like that. Facebook, I'm very familiar with, you know, the same thing. You know, it's just too easy for people that aren't doing nothing but sitting behind the computer to regurgitate and say, oh, well, that guy who has credentials said it first. And then it just becomes magnified, and the original
Absolutely.
story that the guy with credentials said isn't really the intent. It was just a snippet from an article that he wrote, an article that an ESPN writer wrote, an article that a NBC Sports writer wrote, and then that snippet gets taken out and becomes this huge narrative.
Absolutely.
I like the Celtics, what they're saying after this one, too, as it comes in. We need to be even better Tuesday. And I know we're going to have a lot of fun tonight. Rightfully so. Blowout win like that when everyone said you might lose in five, you might get swept. Well, that's out the window now. I think both of those options are out the window at this point. I'm not sure if the Celtics are going to win at this point. I'm not going to step to that conclusion just off of one game. But I think it's a possibility now. I picked Cleveland in seven, and now I'm worried about it because this defense proved me wrong in round two.
I want to check. You're not worried about it. Sure, you might be wrong, but you're not worried about it. You want to be wrong.
Yeah, you're right. I will say, though.
It's not like you're pulling for Cleveland in seven. You're not. We know that.
Yeah. No, that's just what my head told me because I knew – see, this defense has surprised even me at every turn. And I came into the playoffs saying, you know, there's concerns about the offense. There's worries about the offense, of course. I think it's been better than we anticipated. But all year long, no matter who they lost, Hayward on night one, Irving later in the season, Tice, who was a big part of this team's defense and defensive rebounding, which is a big part of defense, too, as we know. So they lost all those pieces, and their defense remained brutally consistent late into the season. And then you saw them give guys like Giannis trouble in the regular season. You saw them give Embiid trouble in the regular season. I mean, they beat Philly in three of the four matchups in the regular season. So add all the Philly games together by the end of the year, and they beat them in seven of nine, that would be. So this defense is the real deal. It's elite. It is challenging. I mean, Snotty, let me ask you this. Did you ever imagine – we thought they were going to do one of two things. Maybe slow LeBron, probably not. But more likely, stay home on the shooters, shut down the roll guys, and let LeBron, you know, get his. Did you ever imagine they do both? Like, that wouldn't have happened in my wildest dreams, but this defense is showing that's what they're capable of at their best.
Yeah, in a perfect world, you know, that's what you do. You just bottle up LeBron. Like, you single up LeBron. I didn't think they would double LeBron as they did early. But what they do, they wait until he catches, starts making the move, and it's in the double. I love that. And I love the fact that, you know, again, the rotations behind whoever was coming to double was so sharp, it didn't damage them. But let's be honest. Kyle Korver missed a couple wide opens early. You know, same thing with J.R. Smith. But that's what happens when you got a guy closing out hard on you. So you're right. I didn't in my wildest dreams. I thought they'd have to give up one or the other. Either you sit home and you let LeBron James work singled, and LeBron goes for 35, 40, and, you know, you just try to make sure you limit everyone else. Or you try to bottle LeBron, and then you run the risk of letting Kevin Love and Korver and J.R. Smith bomb away, and all of a sudden the offense kind of avalanches. I didn't think that Boston would be able to do both. And they, hey, like you said, Brad Stevens, it's just unbelievable the level of attention to detail this team plays for a team so young. You can just see the little things, man, like the switches of the balls in the air. Just the way they handled the off ball action that's trying to get Kyle Korver open. Kyle Korver couldn't breathe, and he got away with a couple times he got loose. I saw they run the pin down. He just come running up and catch and shoot, as only really him and JJ Redick can, and that was awesome. He got a couple of them, you know. Steph also. I'm not gonna disrespect Steph Curry, but for the most part, yeah, everywhere the Cavs turned, there was a defender in their face, and they just didn't know how to handle it.
Celtics held J.R. Smith to 4, Kyle Korver to 5, George Hill to 5, Jeff Green to 6, while also holding LeBron James to 15. And this was stunning. Through that second quarter when they built the 30-point lead into the halftime, or right out of the halftime, around that area, somewhere in there, you know, Jeff Van Gundy said they didn't have to score a single point in the second quarter, and they still would have had the lead. And I think Celtics did some really interesting things on the offensive end in this one that should give you some reason for hope. At this point, like, why wouldn't you have some reason for hope in this one? I think you showed today that the Celtics have the recipe to at least make this interesting, which you got to love. And what's the percentage? You know this off the top of your head, Snotty. There's like an interesting percentage on game one winners and how many win a series. Like, I think it's like 60% or something like that.
It's something high like that. Now, here's my thing with that, because we know, I mean, hey, Boston's the higher seed, all that. LeBron's been the game breaker. You know, that's why it didn't matter with the Raptors. I never felt the Raptors, even though I try to be optimistic. But, you know, it's LeBron James. We keep saying that. It's LeBron James. We're not like, mythologizing him. We're not giving him a superpower. It's true. We know he kind of skates the regular season, and then when it's time to get funky, he gets funky.
So Mike in Pittsburgh's on the line. We want to get to these callers because we got an hour to go here. You know, 4 minutes of garbage time gives you a lot of time for a show. Normally we start these a little late. We got the full thing tonight all the way to 7:30. So you got over an hour, guys. 347-215-7771. The call lines are brought to you by Mack Weldon. 20% off your first order. Mack Weldon. Need some underwear, shirts, pants? Don't like going to the mall? I don't like going to the mall. 20% off your first order. CLNS at checkout, MackWeldon.com. Our first caller tonight is from Pittsburgh. You like the mall, Nick? Come on. The mall gives me the creep.
I haven't been to a mall in years. Do malls even exist anymore? Most of them are, like, closed down. Like, the mall where I live is,
people,
like, an indoor flea market.
People are going to MackWeldon.com. Come on. All right, Mike in Pittsburgh says the Celtics can't get overconfident. So that's a good entry point for some discussion right here. Mike, welcome to the show. Good to hear from you.
Thanks. Hey, guys, a great win. But as soon as the game ended, my focus shifted to game two. And what I want the Celtics, Stevens, to remember, and all Celtics fans, last year how Cleveland humiliated Boston twice in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
That's the level of intensity and the effort and the mindset I want them to come out on Tuesday. Now, I'm not going to watch Shannon Sharp tomorrow. I don't want these players thinking how good they are. They beat Cleveland by 25. Because on Tuesday, you're going to get an historical LeBron James effort. And Boston needs to match that. And Stevens even needs to throw some new wrinkles into what they showed today. Because, you know, guys, how did Cleveland beat them last year in Boston as a Celtics fan was humiliating to me. And if I feel the Celtics can go into Tuesday with that mindset and don't get too happy after game one, I honestly believe they can beat Cleveland again. I feel as the series goes, there's some finals fatigue LeBron might start feeling about Golden State. I don't think he thinks they can beat Golden State. So as the series ends, I think he might almost be resigned if they lose because he doesn't want to have to deal with Golden State.
I'll ask you this, Mike. This is interesting, and Snotty can take this too. Do you think he knows what he's doing this summer yet, or do you think it's going to be based off what happens here? Because if he knows what he's doing this summer, that becomes very interesting. Like, all right, we've gotten our ass kicked by Golden State. How many years running? It could happen again, and I got to play some extra games there. If I'm out of town in Cleveland anyway, like, screw this. Like, I wonder if he's set on what he's doing this summer. That's a very important consideration when it comes to that.
Well, I think he either – if he loses to Boston or would lose badly to Golden State in the finals, I think he would leave. I think the only way he would stay is if somehow they gave Golden State everything they had. And at this point, you know, I just don't see that happen. But my final point, guys, will be I don't want the Celtics players, and like I heard someone say about Shannon Sharp tomorrow, I don't want to hear the people start changing their minds saying, okay,
no.
Boston's the favorite now. I want the Celtics to remember last year what Cleveland did to them and take that mentality into Tuesday night. Thanks, guys.
Mike, great
no
call.
Problem.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you
great
so
call.
Much.
Can I jump in on that real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, just real quick, because Mike is absolutely right. But I think, you know, like the fan base, sure, tell that to the fan base. We know from just watching how Brad Stevens works and how this team works and having Al Horford on the team, I have zero concern about the Celtics getting overconfident. I have zero concern about the Celtics letting their guard down. They have what I call what's been called appropriate fear of LeBron James, meaning they respect him. But, you know, they don't fear him, but they respect the hell out of him. They know he's capable of. They also are confident in themselves. So I have zero worries about Boston thinking next game is going to be sweet or, you know, they're going to lay down. They know. They respect their opposition. And I'm going to say my last thing on this. This is where the lack of Kyrie Irving is really going to show for the Cavs. Not for the Celtics, for the Cavs. Boston has multiple playmakers. The Cavs have LeBron James. And then, you know, I guess Jordan Clarkson and Rodney Hood off the bench are kind of one-on-one scorers. This is where, even though the Cavs thought they can get, you know, they tried. George Hill is a good player, obviously not a great player. This is where not having a third star and a second ball handler who can really press his defense is going to, you know, maybe, hopefully, doom the Cavaliers. They just don't have anyone else. Once the ball's out of LeBron's hands, they have no one else who's going to really just attack. So, there you go.
Know what? You know what? Cleveland doesn't have the coach to make those adjustments. I mean, what is he going to do to change the series? Throw Ante Zizic on the floor, like out of, you know, complete desperation? He's our thought maker, guys. Or, you know what I'm saying? Larry Nance. I like Larry Nance a little. He's not a terrible player either. But I mean, what is Tyronn Lue actually going to do to counter Brad Stevens? And then when Brad Stevens counters whatever Tyronn Lue or LeBron James, whoever's coaching the damn team, when they counter what Brad Stevens does, then it becomes a secondary and tertiary counters that Brad Stevens has. They're just not going to be able to match up. I just don't see it happening.
Let's dig into that a little bit, because that is interesting. So the first thing you consider is that LeBron's probably going to get back into the 20s and 30s. That just seems like a given. But then there's still like a point gap right there. Like at least 10 points they have to make up on top of that if he adds another 10, 15 points on what he did today. And I do wonder where that's going to come from, because Al Horford has Kevin Love in wraps. And that they've been able to isolate that matchup early on and completely own it. That was a major factor in the opening minutes of this one. Love just getting completely bodied in the post, blocked on the other end. Like, Love got taken out of this game so quickly. And then where's it come from next? I mean, Tristan Thompson coming in. Jason Tatum really ripped Tristan Thompson out of this game. When he switched in onto him on defense and held him on the three-point line and like gave him the little shake and bake out there and hit a couple threes in his face, it felt like Thompson was done after that. The Celtics have some serious matchup issues that they throw at Cleveland. And where they turn this around, Snotty, I don't know.
I think, all right, for one, schematically, they might have to try to start Tristan Thompson against Al Horford. It's funny because that's the running narrative, right? Al Horford's terrified of Tristan Thompson, and, oh, Al Horford's going to fold. We know it's not. Al Horford's not scared of anybody. But Tristan's a little more physical and a little more mobile, and he might maybe give Al a little trouble. So they might try to start him. I don't know who's going to move out of the starting lineup, but they might try to start Tristan Thompson just to give him a jolt of energy in the starting lineup. But other than that, I'm not quite sure, man. It's a schematic thing with them. They just we saw Boston gets in the rotation. Boston makes it swing, and all of a sudden Al Horford's standing wide open. No one even closes out on him. Marcus Morris, same thing in the second half. They blew the ball. They punctured the defense. Jason Tatum drives baseline and finds Marcus Morris standing on the wing 3-point line, and nobody even closes out on him. Like, he just like takes a second to check, and like, oh, okay, and he just drains a wide open three. And that's focus, that's preparation. But guess what? The Cavs have done this all season. So I don't know if it's going to change now. How does it change now? Because this is how they've been all season. They just started overwhelming the Raptors offensively, so we didn't really pay attention. It didn't matter what they did defensively against the Raptors, but we saw against the Pacers. Same thing. Pacers pushed the pace, got out in transition, and like their guys weren't scared to take wide open shots. And the Pacers had them in game seven. So like, I don't know other than, all right, you try to start Tristan. I saw a number. Somebody said that when Jeff Green and Tristan Thompson are on the floor, the defensive rating is like 121 for the Cavs. So you just can't play Tristan Thompson and Jeff Green at the same time. But other than that, hey, DeMarcus Smart posted up Jeff Green, man. You know, Jaylen Brown was guarding Kevin Love in the post and swatted his shot out. And then, you know, Al saved it, and Jaylen Brown came and scored at the other end. When you have two perimeter guys, you know what? I tweeted this, and you know, I don't know if you guys remember. There was a time when it was going around that, you trade Jaylen or Jason, the pieces of Kawhi, or would you trade them both for Anthony Davis? And I get it. Anthony Davis is awesome. These two, both of these guys are going to be not just all-stars, like kind of franchise. They can be franchise pillar kind of guys. They're not, maybe not as good as Anthony Davis, obviously, but they're going to be too good to say you trade both of them. And, like, I think even I did maybe underestimate how great these guys were. In the first round, Jaylen averaged like 19. In the second round, Tatum averaged 23. Like, this is high level stuff. And we saw, like, hey, a lot like how Philly just didn't have enough 2-way guys. We're seeing that with the Cavs. Outside of LeBron James, they don't have Jeff Green's not a defender. J.R. Smith is not a defender. Kyle Korver is a great shooter, not a defender. Hood, Clarkson, not defenders. So, like, no matter what, pick your poison. I almost guarantee, because we saw that Jason had a good game, right? Jason Tatum had a really good game, but he wasn't like he was against Philly. They prioritized. They said, well, you know what? We saw what Jason Tatum did last round. We are not going to let him do that this round. And so Jason, they forgot about Jaylen Brown, and Jaylen Brown says, okay, I'm going to kill whoever you put on me. He killed Kyle Korver.
Brown went right at them from the opening tip. I mean, he took the tip off and went right to the basket.
First point.
LeBron, whoever's in front of him, he was going through the hole. And this is the Cavaliers all year. This is nothing this is not a new thing. They were 29th in defensive rating this season, right? That's atrocious. So it's coming back to bite him right now, and Brad Stevens is the coach to exploit. Like this is like he did against Philly, where he exploited the weaknesses of Ben Simmons and Embiid to perfection. He's exploiting the holes in the Cavs defense. And like you said, man, I don't think Ty Lue has the chops to somehow make some adjustment where the defense suddenly is better, right?
He doesn't have the talent. He doesn't have the talent because the Cleveland Cavaliers have a whole lot of unidimensional players, guys that can do one thing.
Absolutely.
Like Kyle Korver can't do anything but shoot threes. I mean, he's not defending anybody. He's worse than J.J. Redick and Gallinari or Bellinelli, whatever his name is for Philly in that regard. He has unidimensional players. They can't switch. Boston can switch at every single position. You have Marcus Smart ripping LeBron James on a switch. Straight up LeBron James trying to back him down. Marcus Smart strip him. Just can't do it.
Great.
Too much length.
Yeah.
Too much athleticism. Too much, you know, especially on the perimeter. And LeBron James is best scoring when he has a head full of steam, and the Boston Celtics just smothered him. Just smothered him. And everybody, even the players, they said didn't have enough strength or, you know, didn't have the body. I remember specifically Shannon Sharpe on Undisputed said, nope, don't have enough, you know, doesn't have enough body, not enough body. Jason Tatum, not enough body. Jaylen Brown, not enough body. And they found a way to stop LeBron James from getting a head full of steam. Even Terry Rozier switched on to LeBron James a couple of times. I mean, there's just nobody that can't defend the other positions. Meanwhile, nobody on Cleveland can defend the Celtics. So it's, I mean, not to get ahead. It's just one game, like we're all going to say. You're not going to get too, you know, excited. But
when we look back on it now, that first round series that Boston very easily could have lost. We remember back how big of a challenge Milwaukee gave Boston that first round.
Switchy team.
They neutralized the length. They neutralized this team's like super length, super switchability. They threw the same thing back at them, and it kind of just became a hodgepodge for seven games.
Yep.
And
switchy team.
Now we're saying that Cleveland doesn't have that. They don't have that same defensive versatility to throw right back at them. And I mean, yeah, Matt Moore is talking about maybe Jaylen Brown's not hitting spot-up face-up shots in Kyle Korver's face in game two, but he's still disposing of a guy like that on the wing fairly easily, no matter how he does it.
Jaylen shot 39% from three regular season. It's funny because, look, Matt Moore is my guy. I love Matt Moore. I've been on his show. I want to have him on my podcast. He's one of the best out there. But
he's good for conversation.
But no, this is my thing. There's a lot of guys, obviously, when you're a national guy, right, you kind of just have dip in and out of teams. You can't really follow them religiously. And so, like, I saw him saying something about, oh, yeah, look, Aaron Baines shoot mid-range jump shots. And, like, we all know that's been part of Aaron Baines' game all year, right? He just kind of does it every now and then. It's fine. So when he said, oh, Aaron Baines, I'm going to hit that shot, I'm thinking to myself, you haven't – obviously, and it's not his fault. I'm not saying he's wrong for this. But same thing with Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown has shown proclivity to catch and shoot threes. When he's rolling, he's confident. He's shooting, catching, shoot threes. He's shooting them accurately. Corners and above the break. It's not a surprise. So guess what? He will shoot those in Kyle Korver's face. So it's funny to see those kind of things.
Isaiah, New Jersey's on the line, waiting patiently. Thank you, Isaiah, for being with us all year. Let's bring him in and see what he's bringing to the table tonight. Good afternoon, Isaiah.
Isaiah, what's going on, fellas? How's everything with you, Snotty, Bobby?
What up, fella? What up, boy?
Hey. It was a beautiful day today. Mother's Day came out great. You know, got my son.
Yeah, shout out to all the mothers out there. I forgot to throw that one out there.
Yeah, happy Mother's Day out there. Got my son in the studio. We made some great music. Then I come back home, and the Celtics, excuse me for being a little too excited, but did we just drag Cleveland in the back of the building and just really give them the business? I mean,
did I just watch what I just watched?
Like,
We need an air horn like soundboard, just so we could just right when he said that.
Exactly.
That's because, Nick right there, Nick. We gotta add that.
I got you.
Yeah, because I just watched us completely dominate LeBron James, and I've never. I think Bobby, you asked the question earlier. Was this LeBron James's worst game in Boston Garden?
It was.
I have never seen him give up in the fourth quarter and just like you said, Snotty.
He needs his rest. He had a whole week, but he needs more. Let him sit out, you know, half of that fourth quarter. He just gave up.
To be honest with you, I think that Cleveland didn't have any idea because they walked through Toronto and they came in lackadaisical and they got waxed. They completely got outclassed. And because of that, LeBron just checked himself out and said, all right, they got game one. And we are going to see him in game two. But he's like Thanos, man. We got that glove a little bit further off. If we could just keep doing what we're doing, we'll pull that glove off, man. And get
I haven't
Thanos
seen the movie yet.
Here.
Stop giving spoilers.
Hey, man, you haven't seen it by now. That's your problem.
I'm waiting for it to come out on the corner, bootleg DVD.
I got you, Nick. but really, that was an amazing game, man. Brad is awesome. The team is awesome. And just like we said in game one, it just looks like the Celtics really have all the mismatches. And if LeBron's not going to have an effort, I can't see Cleveland winning this, to be honest. Because we have all the mismatches except for LeBron.
How many times on this show, too, have we talked about, you know, like, we'll give him a ride next year. We're all excited about next year because why not? Like, look at the team that's coming back. You know, how about this year? Like, we said this last year, too, when we were talking about next year, last year. Like, you got to live in the moment sometimes and just say, like, wow. Just be in awe of what is going on right now because this is phenomenal. Like, me, Nick, Snotty, none of us, Isaiah. None of us ever imagined this. Not only two round wins, but a win in the East Finals against LeBron in game one in blowout fashion. Like, this just grows more unbelievable by the day. In blowout fashion, shutting down LeBron.
This is the best kind of team to root for because this came out of nowhere, and it's all heart, grit. It's not like there's not talent on the team. We are incredibly talented. But because we are so young, and these guys are showing so much heart. It's so easy to root for them. I mean, this is the kind of team that comes out of nowhere that really captures a city and galvanizes a city behind it because they are slaying Goliath. Tonight they did something that, I mean, even the Garnett Celtics had a hard time with LeBron. I've never seen someone pin him down like this and check himself out of a game of this magnitude.
And this is the thing. People are saying, I'll throw this quick. People are saying, oh, this Celtics team isn't really undermanned. They have top picks. They have Al Horford. They have plenty. That's not what we're saying. You know, obviously there's still talent. There's still personnel here. This is Danny Ainge's effort as much as it is Brad Stevens, the way he's built the squad, and he'll admit that too. But they're young, and this isn't usually the talent level that you have to get by LeBron. Like, we're talking relative to LeBron and company in Golden State, and they are proving that they are on that caliber, even with that talent gap that they've been given. You know, you would have imagined that they would have needed Kyrie to get it done in this series, that they would have needed Hayward to win this series. So, yeah, there's still talent on the roster, but there's still a definitive, you know, undermanned effort going on here. And Stevens has made it work with guys off the bench. He's getting Semi Ojeleye involved still into the third. So that's what we're talking about when we're talking about the talent gap. And everyone's like, oh, there's still talent there. Well, yeah, but we're talking relative here to the competition.
Well, you know, there's a comparison that I wanted to ask. I don't know, maybe call me crazy. And in no way am I saying that any of these players, with the exception of maybe Al Horford, is as good as the other players, but there's kind of like a small parallel in the way that they play ball. And this is why I laughed when I kept hearing that the Philadelphia 76ers would have been a better matchup for the Cleveland Cavaliers because they have the two better players, Joel Embiid and Ben can't shoot from 3 feet from the basket, Simmons. The reason that I always thought, while you guys are saying no one expected, nobody expected a game one blowout like this, although I do think that the rest hurt the Cavaliers more than it helped them. They're a team that never had the chemistry and weren't in sync, and they weren't in sync when they came out today, especially after being off for so long. But the reason that I think the Celtics were the best matchup for the Cleveland Cavaliers out of the East is because they have kind of like a poor man's mirror image of the Golden State Warriors. Al Horford is like Draymond Green. Klay Thompson is like Jaylen Brown. Jason Tatum, like maybe like a baby KD, you know, in like 5-7 years or something like that. And Terry Rozier, a very, you know what I'm saying, I don't want to say poor facsimile, but you know what I mean, a Steph Curry. They can spread the ball around to any number of guys. They can get 20 points. And then you got a guy like Marcus Morris that can come off the bench and give you 20 points, or start in today's case and give you 20 points. That's different than the two-man Philadelphia 76ers team with two quote-unquote superstars, or the two-man Toronto with a nice bench team with two all-stars slash superstars in DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry. I think the Boston Celtics have that type of roster and that type of versatility and that type of chemistry, along with that type of coaching, to be the best matchup for the Cleveland Cavaliers, and that was borne out today in a 25-point blowout that nobody expected. I can't wait to hear what they say tomorrow on the shows. Can't wait.
So, like you just said, man, I was seeing those same parallels, and you know, I'm not gonna look. The Warriors have two MVP caliber guys, and then you know they got two other All Stars. So you're right. I'm not saying it's the exact same, but look at the versatility at center between Draymond and Horford, and Horford's even a better shooter. You know what I mean? And with his size, Horford's size, he's actually probably a better defender against most bigs than Draymond is. Draymond just uses his, like, activity and is, like, a little more intelligent. Right. So that's cool. That's right. And sure, KD is that guy. KD is probably – I'll say KD probably is the best scorer in the NBA right now with his size and versatility. But guess what? Tatum's 6'10", and while he's not that level, he's certainly a handful for anybody one-on-one. Klay is, you know, he's athletic. He can shoot lights out. Jalen can't shoot like him, but Jalen's just is more athletic and better at attacking the hole and scoring in other ways. So yeah, and then of course, you know, right now Terry Rozier is filling in for Kyrie. They're not like Steph, but the point is, there's no weakness on offense, you know. And then, so yeah, man, it's something. It's all about that versatility. I said this coming into the season. People laughed at me. I didn't care about losing Avery Bradley. I didn't care about losing Isaiah Thomas. I didn't care about Jay Crowder, because you replace them with, you know, a rookie who's 6'9", 6'10", with long arms. You replace them with, you know, Gordon Hayward's supposed to be there, and, you know, knock on wood, he'll be healthy next year. So next year, just think about how insane it's going to be that they can roll out a lineup of Marcus Smart, Gordon Hayward, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, and Al Horford. Like, that's switching 1 through 5, you know.
But first,
you know, that's,
we have this,
you know,
year.
Even right now, Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Marcus Morris, Al Horford. We just saw what that lineup did, you know. And like we said, Terry Rozier is no punk, you know. He's not like. And this, I got a feeling last year in the playoffs when Isaiah got hurt and then Boston won that game against Cleveland. I have a feeling that, you know, this is based on no intel. That's probably when Danny Ainge knew that no matter what, they had to find something to do with Isaiah Thomas. Healthy or hurt, whatever. They weren't moving forward with Isaiah, because against the elite teams, we saw what happened.
It's been a dual effort between – I mean, Brad is getting so much credit. I don't think Ainge has gotten enough credit, because he constructed this deep roster that just had so many options beyond the top dogs. And even tonight, you look at some of the guys they threw in the end there when this thing was out of hand in the final 4 minutes. Those guys became useful pieces this year too. The back end guys like Monroe and Yabusele for spot moments, and Abdel Nader's another story. But they've just had so much depth, so much versatility this year. And it seems like every time they lost a guy, there was another guy in that place. Like Tice, his loss was buffered a little bit by Monroe and Baines, and Morris stepped up when Hayward went down, and you had Tatum ready to go in the starting lineup. Let's talk about, Isaiah first. Isaiah, any thoughts before we let you go?
Actually, I had a question for you guys.
Go ahead.
Is there anything realistically, I know you threw the question out earlier, but is there realistically anything Cleveland could do to, because I think Nick said it also, they don't have any pieces to play off of their bench other than starting Tristan Thompson or starting.
This is what they
got to
do.
Love.
You know what it is? LeBron's got to stop chucking up the three-pointers that he settled for in the fourth quarter, get back into the lane and make those passes to get his shooters clean looks. I mean, he just laid down his arms tonight. It was embarrassing, really. And someone asked him after the game tonight, I've been following along on Twitter, about the physicality out there. And this is what he responds with. And this is something Sonny was talking about, too. He says, if you followed my history, game one's usually a feel-out game for me. Like, that's what he chalked this one up to. Are you kidding me? Like, he just laid down in that second half.
Oh,
but I can believe that, though, because he did. He really, to me,
he
it
did.
Looked like he said, he, yeah, to me it looked like he just said, after the Celtics came out in the fourth quarter with that 7-0 burst, to me, he just said, you know what? Y'all got this. I'm going to go sit down, and I'm going to watch how y'all play for the rest of this and see how I make
it. Oh, it's such a joke. It's poor leadership.
And, but I don't. I'm not necessarily going to say that because if he comes out in game two and he's like, "All right, I figured it out," then it's for the better. But I just think that he's older, and this is a real try for him because I've watched the off ball action. The off ball action is so physical, and not to say that LeBron's not physical, but the Celtics touch everyone coming through the lane. Everyone's getting an elbow. Everyone's getting checked. I mean, the off-ball action is really exciting to the point where they're bumping these Cleveland guys off of their cuts, and LeBron's just standing there at the top of the key with nowhere to go with the ball except to make a one-on-one move. So LeBron, I really don't see how they're going to – what adjustments they can make that Brad can counter with this deep Celtic lineup. And I really think that this is kind of telling, like the Philly game, there are some mismatches here that they just can't overcome. I mean, if you're gonna play Kyle Korver, he's gonna have to defend someone. Who's the backup, the point guard that started tonight for them, that kept getting caught in the pick and roll and kept getting back down into the paint.
Calderon?
No, not Calderon. He came over from Sacramento. George Hill kept getting caught in the spin cycle. Every time they tried to switch, there are some real defensive things that LeBron cannot make up for and some offensive problems that Cleveland really can't solve. He's going to have to really, really dig deep in his bag of tricks this time in order to get the job done against this well-oiled, physical Celtic team.
I want to bring it back to, and thanks, Isaiah, I want to bring it back to Tristan Thompson because if we're talking personnel and the changes that they're going to make, it's going to be Thompson. And Kevin O'Connor just brought this up on Twitter because he said that Boston is 9.8 plus 9.8 overall these playoffs net rating, but when they're with Horford and Baines on the court, they're a minus 7.4. So he seems to think that going – Thompson and Love to start the game is going to force Boston to go Horford and Baines. That's not their ideal lineup. And that Thompson is the guy who's historically given Horford issues defensively. But this is what I'm going to throw back at that. Tatum torched Thompson tonight when they brought him in. They would switch him onto Tatum on the perimeter again and again, and he would just get caught dancing out there on whether he's going to drive or shoot. And Tatum has been pulling up in guys' faces all postseason. I think Brown would be capable of taking him in a similar manner. And I think at that point, when you're pulling out Thompson on the perimeter, he becomes a defensive liability just as much as anybody else. So that might be something they go to. But I mean, here's my thing on Thompson too. Is this the same Thompson we've seen in years past?
It's not. Nope, the injuries have robbed him of some of his because that was his thing, right? On the perimeter, he was a dog, and he would even guard Steph for stretches, and he was one of those guys that could switch on the perimeter. That was a big thing that made them so dangerous. He was both a rim protector. He wasn't like a huge shot blocker, but he was a deterrent, and then he would go on the perimeter, and that's why they paid him that money, right? Even though he only averaged 8 and 8 the year before, he was versatile. He gave them a lot of options as far as switchiness, and that's not who he is now post injury. So that's a big thing.
He can still grab rebounds. I mean, he's out there. I think he was obviously a spark, at least in that, you know, early in the game when he first came in, and he's the obvious adjustment for the Cleveland Cavaliers. But I just don't think that, you know, if you're relying on Tristan Thompson to be, you know what I'm saying, the key to changing the series, I mean, I just don't see it happening. I know, and that's not a complete disrespect of Tristan Thompson, but maybe it is. You know what I'm saying? I just don't think Tristan Thompson, like Snotty just said, post injury, post Kardashian, post whatever he's doing, post he's just the same. You know, Tristan Thompson. I mean, this series is going to be more competitive. I believe every single game in this series from here on out, even the games that the Celtics may hypothetically lose, because I'm not going to predict a sweep. I just predict six in every series, because that's just not the thing that I do. It's just six sounds like a good number, and if it goes seven, well, you know, sometimes it happens. But every single game, even the ones that the Cavaliers may potentially win, will not be as lopsided as this. It's going to be a tougher series, but I still think that just with the adjustments, Tristan Thompson is not going to be the dude that's going to save this series for the Cavaliers. You're going to When you look at the game, and I think we've already discussed this previously, you got 11 points out of Rodney Hood and 10 points out of Jordan Clarkson. I mean, and they shot, you know, they didn't shoot terribly bad. I mean, 5 for 12 is not great, but it's still, you know, decent. And, you know, you got those points in under 20 minutes, 16 minutes for Jordan Clarkson and 19 minutes for Rodney Hood. When are you going to get 11 points in 19 minutes from Rodney Hood and 10 points in 16 minutes from Jordan Clarkson on this team like this? I mean, some things did go right for Cleveland in this series. You'd love for those guys to score while LeBron scores, you know, 40 points. But even if LeBron scored 40 points in this game, they still only tie the game. You see what I'm saying? Like, it just, and we know how the Boston Celtics execute down the stretch from the previous two series. That when it comes time, you know, in crunch time, they make defensive plays and offensive plays. I just don't see any adjustments, since that's what I think the question was. What adjustments can Cleveland possibly make? They'll win some games. LeBron will win them some games. Any team with LeBron will win games. But in terms of personnel adjustments, I mean, like I said, short of Ante Zizic and Larry Nance possibly coming in, starting Tristan Thompson is the only adjustment they can make. And I don't think Tyronn Lue is a good enough coach to really make the best of the people that he has at his disposal anyway.
Plenty of topics on the table here. Al Horford, Marcus Morris, we're going to get to after this, but I do want to take another call. We got a half hour left. 347-215-7771 is your call-in number. Isaiah, thank you. Thank you to Mike in Pittsburgh for calling in tonight. We're going to hear from the CEO, Nick Gelso, later in the shows at TD Garden. A number of other reporters there for CLNS might join us too. We never know what we're going to get, so we'll see. For now, we're going to talk with you, Jimmy, in Atlanta. Thanks for waiting. Jimmy, what's up?
What's up, fellas? Bobby, Snotty, Nick, what's good?
What's up, my brother?
Good to hear from you, man.
Jimmy!
Yeah, man. Feeling good about it. You know, I'll just say this, you know, the Celtics are blessed with this playoff tablet, in the sense of starting off with Milwaukee, Philly, and then Cleveland. So I feel like Boston would, you know, would probably have lost to Toronto. That's the only team to me in the East that can truly beat the Celtics. You know what I mean? I think they're going to beat Cleveland in six. This is what I said from the jump. When I called last time, I said that, you know, Cleveland's a perfect matchup for the Celtics based on all the things you guys talked about today. You know, at the end of the day, it boils down to defense. And so to me, the Celtics, you know, my boy said, who's going to guard LeBron? Who's going to guard LeBron? The question is, who's going to guard Tatum, Brown, Morris? Who's going to guard them dudes? Because they're so versatile, you know, between each one of them cats who can defend and then get out there and score. There is nothing Tyronn Lue can do to counter that. I don't care who you have over there. He does not have the personnel to counter what the Celtics have. So basketball is a game of matchups, man. Period.
Absolutely. Yep.
So that's where it's at, man. The Celtics gonna win this in six. We go on to the finals, and if we go against Houston, the Celtics will beat Houston. And if we go against Golden State, whew, That's going to be fun to watch.
My only disagreement, my only disagreement was you said that Toronto might have beat Boston. I think Toronto
Toronto, man, for some reason, they just got the Celtics number the way they match up.
Regular season and playoffs, two different things. And we would have seen the same thing with Boston. JV would have been Valanciunas would have been body by Baines. Horford would have killed Serge Ibaka. Like, so I'm going to have to disagree.
You may be right, man, but here's what I'm saying. I think Toronto was a good team, man. I just think that against LeBron, man, they're whack, man. They just don't have the mental fortitude against Cleveland. He in their head. But I think against any other team, they're not afraid of. So I just feel like, you know, Toronto could matchup wise, I think they could play with the Celtics. And I think
You would have conceded this too, probably. I mean, I think they would have beat Toronto too, but I don't think it would have been easy by any stretch of imagination.
I think that would have been a six-seven game series. The coaching advantage that Boston has and the amount of discipline that Boston has. I mean, look, Toronto's going to leave shoot. You make Toronto play defense for 15 seconds, somebody's going to make a mistake. And that's not going to happen with Boston. So guess what? Tatum would have got shots. Jalen would have got shots. We saw it. That's why Kyle Korver somehow in game, you know, 4, 5, and 6, after they've seen him do it, was still getting wide open corner threes, which was just insane to me. So yeah,
you may be right. I'm not even going to argue that one because it don't really matter. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like I said, at the end of the day, the way that these playoffs have laid out have been perfect in my eyes. You know, the only team initially I thought Philly might win that series. Until halfway through the first game, and I was like, "Oh no, it's the same thing. It's a game of matchups. The Celtics match up better." And again, it goes back to you guys have said it well all tonight. Excuse that noise environment. You said it well all tonight. The fact of the matter, Danny Ainge deserves a lot of credit. This squad with these interchangeable players, who are defensive base, but they all can score, man. They just, you know, at the end of the day, they're learning. They're so young, so as Tatum progresses. We've seen Jaylen Brown when he first came in. People booed, didn't think he could offensively do anything.
That's
but that dude is nice.
About now.
You know what I'm saying? He is. He's the truth. I mean, so just like Snotty, you said earlier, you know, oh yeah, it might be cool to trade them cats for Davis, but man, why not just roll with these two dudes who've shown that they nice, man? You have two pillars of potential greatness running side by side. That's stronger than one dude, right?
One day they're going to cost a lot of money.
What?
I think, you know, you still got two more years of Jalen. You still got three more years after this of Jason Tatum. You only got one more year of Rozier, which is probably why I don't even want to go down that talk of the discussion. And, of course, Marcus Smart is coming up this year. It's a nice staggering, and it's good to have players like this. They can do stuff like this on rookie contracts. I actually calculated out of the 9-man rotation, 5 guys are playing on their rookie contracts right now. So, you build on those rookie contracts and get, you know, quality players. And the Celtics did that. Kyrie, Gordon Hayward. You don't need to change anything right now, in my humble opinion. Yeah. I mean, Anthony Davis is a great player, but when you can spread the ball around to multiple guys that can give you 20 on any given night, 20 plus, you can't beat that with one
Roll
super
it.
Monster like Anthony Davis.
Hey, so
the other thing
I tweeted out earlier, hey, Kyrie averaged 24 this year. Jalen averaged 18 in the first round. Tatum averaged almost 24 in the second round. Horford averaged 18-8 in the first round, and Hayward averaged 22 last season they played. That's going to be a starting lineup. Like, you don't break that up, man. You don't break that up.
Yeah. And the other thing is, man, you know, look, Golden State got 4 dudes over there. How are they doing this many years, man? I mean, he's got –
paying,
you know,
the luxury tax, which is what Boston's going to have to do. Like, no team wins a title.
No, they're going to have to do that, man.
Absolutely.
I mean, but if you're fighting for titles, I'm sure that they'll be okay with paying some luxury tax. That's cool. So at the end of the day, you negotiate with these cats, sit them down, like, come on. I know you want max, what have you, but let's talk about this and try to run this for a few extra years and try to get as much as we can out of it, just like Golden State has.
The tough guy is Smart, because here's the thing about Smart. I would bring him back. I would run this whole thing back. But if you're paying him, you know, upwards of 18 to 20 for 4 years or whatever it would be, that cuts into the money later. And then you start the luxury tax this year. That clock gets tougher each year it goes by. And we know those tax burn's not going to get any easier for years to come. So what they kind of smart for is going to be a very important thing.
You think 18 to 20, Bobby? 18 to 20 for Marcus Smart on the free agency?
No. Smart can get about 12.
Hey, if there's one crazy team out there, though, you get put in a very tough spot. And that's the thing. Like, if any team out there is just very quietly.
My man, the other teams just don't have money like that. They just don't. There's not a lot of money out there. And so, I mean, teams understand Marcus Smart can't shoot. And, like, you know, point guards are. Right now, the league is flush with point guards, you know? So I think it's almost a situation where, like, even though teams would love to have him, I don't think anyone's going to break the bank for Marcus Smart. And this is what happens when, you know, there's no cap smoothing and teams just kind of spend all their money like the way they did that in summer of 2016. So that's just me, man. There's no team that's going to throw $18 million in Marcus Smart. It's just not going to happen.
Do you think there's a Brad Stevens effect maybe on Marcus Smart as well? Like, what do teams expect from Marcus Smart in a system that's not Brad Stevens? Because Brad Stevens gives him, you know, a pretty long leash to do the things that he wants to do because he is Marcus Smart. That's, you know, if you were to try to rein him in, you wouldn't get the same Marcus Smart. You have to let him kind of, you know, do his thing. Do you think that, you know, other teams may be a little bit dissuaded, you know, by the, you know, the opinion that maybe Marcus Smart is one of those guys like a Jay Crowder or whoever else is not going to look quite as good outside of a Brad Stevens system?
I mean, absolutely. That's the whole thing. But they've seen it now. Crowder, Avery Bradley. I'm not going to really knock Isaiah for it because, you know, even a guy like Jared Sullinger, right? Jared started and played big minutes for Boston, and they went to the playoffs, and he goes in, like, within a year, he's out of the league. It's in another team. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, I mean,
Kelly was good, though. No, he wasn't good.
That's fine. He was never good. No, Stevens made him useful. This is useful. Like, sending Evan Turner. Evan Turner's not a good player, but he made him look useful, and he got $17 million from Portland, and now he's over there, and that team is underperforming with him on, you know, because he's just not that good.
Thought it was 17.
Yeah, 17 mil a year.
There you go. Evan Turner got $17 million.
Danny Ainge has been so good for this whole Stevens run, too. Like, all that money was flying around, and people go crazy about Horford, and they're like, oh, Horford's making this much money. Well, someone was going to end up in that capsule, and they're lucky it was Horford and not Ian Mahaney, because Ian Mahaney is one of the many awful contracts that are weighing down the Wizards right now. There are a lot of teams that are in bad places in this league right now, Portland among them, because of the terrible deals they signed that summer, and it's going to take those teams years to dig out of that hole.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't care about a billionaire's money. If Boston is a serious contender, they're going to have to dip into their pockets and pay that loot. Here's a good thing, well, a positive thing. Al Horford comes off the books in 2020, and of course they want to bring him back at a smaller salary, hopefully. Smart gets his 12 to 15. And no matter what, like, you can't build a team with all max guys and all minimum guys, right? You got to pay a guy. Smart's going to earn his money. He needs that money, and that's fine. And, yeah, so
Someone said this to me recently. Horford actually has an option after 2019, and it might have been you, Snotty. I don't know. Someone said it to me on the show, but they're like, maybe Horford, you know, they say, Horford, take it off the books that year. We'll give you, what was it, 15 a year or something for 3 years, so you make more money in the end than when you would have made in that 1 year, and then that helps smooth things out as you have to sign Brown,
I mean,
Tatum,
a
lot of those years.
It's a possibility that they talk him into opting out, and so they give him more cash over a longer time, right? Let's say they say, you opt out now, we'll give you, because I think his last year was like 30 mil, right? 28 mil, 30
mil. It's a hefty
mil,
one.
So right, so you opt out now, it'll give you $13 million a year for the next 3 years. You get $39 million stretched out. That would be a huge relief for the Celtics, right? So, yeah, something, it's definitely a possibility. You know, I won't be mad if they gave him, like, let's say they gave him, no matter what, yeah, it's a possibility, right? And, again, we're seeing that maybe Boston's building a culture like the San Antonio Spurs. You saw how the Spurs guys, you know, they gave them a hometown discount, you know. Manu, Tony Parker, Duncan, he maxed out once. After that, he cut him a break. If that's the kind of team Boston's building, now, I think no matter what, eventually there will have to be some kind of decision made, because Gordon Hayward, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and Kyrie, all four, you know, that's a lot of money. But, hey, it's a good problem to have.
Yeah, Kyrie for one more year, and he's going to cost, you know, supermax or whatever it is when he comes off the books. I mean, so you got to think about those things. Somebody's going to have to take a cut somewhere. But you know what? I think out of all the franchises, especially if the Boston Celtics are at the precipice of winning, or are, you know, or already have won and have the, you know, the likelihood, the, you know, are projected to be favorites for, you know, a bigger window. You know what I mean? I can see Al Horford doing something like that. I can, and also players coming off their first four years, their first rookie contract, their max is a smaller percentage of the total salary cap than is a player after his, you know, seventh year or ninth year. So their max is going to be somewhere, I believe, in the teens or maybe 20s, and not in the supermax 30 area. So getting them to maybe take a couple of $1 million or less, speaking of, you know, Jalen and Jason, if you have the opportunity to be, you know, the next potential dynasty. I don't know, we're getting way ahead of ourselves, but you got to think like that. That's the way Danny Ainge is thinking, is what can I do with these players?
I mean, if we're keeping this within the next 2 years, there's really not that much of a concern, actually, which is great because this team for the next year or two is in a really good cost control state, as you said, Nick. And even if we project this long term, they do have to drop a guy or two over the next few years. They still have, like, picks out the wazoo, like Kings pick next year, then Memphis pick at some point in the near future. There's a Clippers pick thrown in there. Like, that's all part of cost control, too. And the NBA, I mean, I've heard little murmurs here or there that the NBA wants to start limiting pick trades or the amount of picks that can be in trades because of what happened with Brooklyn. Well, I don't think that's the right move because as like, the cap gets tighter, the league's not getting as much money from these playoffs being shorter and teams get constrained for money, like, the only way out of that is through – pick swapping and getting, like, cost control through draft picks. That's the way Brooklyn's rebuilt themselves out of their hole. I mean, they haven't nearly gotten there yet, but they've started to make a little progress by, you know, eating some other team's money in exchange for those draft picks, because they know long term those guys are going to be cost controlled. So that gives you a little hope.
You know what they're doing? I mean, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, what's the kid's name? I love so much the small four they got. But Caris LeVert, long, switchy athletes. That's the name of the game, man. You know, even D'Lo, D'Angelo, 6'5", you know, can play point and two. It's the name of the game, DeMar Carroll. So, man, Boston's in a good place. They're in a good place going forward.
To Bobby's point, if the league is considering changing rules based on what your GM just did, then you know your GM is on, like, he's playing, like, three-dimensional chess in that mug. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's like when you know your GM is better than everybody else's GM. That's like a Patriots rule. That's like, you know, they change the rules for, you know, Bill Belichick when he allows a lineman to, you know, run downfield and catch a pass. They now have to declare it before they, you know, enter the, you know, game because of Bill Belichick. It's the same thing. Danny Ainge is changing the culture of the NBA with the way that he does business, and that's unfortunate for him because he's not going to be able to fleece as many teams. Not that I think teams are all that willing to be fleeced, knowing what Danny Ainge can do. He just turns. I mean, in the past several, I've been critical of Danny Ainge, but in the past several years, boy, I don't think you can. Starting with the Brad Stevens trade, Brad Stevens has made him a better drafter, has made him a better executive, and has made the team look better. And I mean, that's all you need. He scored with Brad Stevens, and I mean, the rest is really, you know, he's given Brad Stevens those tools. It's incredible. And cost effective, as Snotty Drippin said, getting those players on their rookie contracts, they can play within that rookie contract at a potentially championship level, and that's what we're looking at right now. This team just blew out the reigning, you know what I'm saying, Eastern Conference champions in game one of the Eastern Conference Finals. This team has players that can play within, like I said, five players of their 9 or 10-man rotation on rookie contracts. That's incredible. It's incredible.
But Scotsman's with us. We're going to talk to him right now. He's been waiting patiently, and we're going to hear from someone of CLNS Media at the Garden over the next 16 minutes, so let's get into that. It's interesting, though, because with this draft pick discussion, I mean, you look at the 30 picks this year in the first round, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. A third of those picks are through trades. So the picks are flying around like crazy now. Teams have no fear in swinging them around in deals. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do with that, because I have heard there are rumors that they're going to take a look at maybe limiting how many picks. Isn't there already a restriction on teams trading first-round picks back-to-back years? I think that's a thing.
That's a rule from, like, the 80s, I think, when some GM was just was just shelling out first round picks because he didn't want to pay him. The Stepien rule. Either way, yeah, you can't trade your first in consecutive years. Now the way around that, you have to have a first round pick. The way around that is you do pick swaps. So even if you trade your pick,
that's how the Brooklyn trade works. Yeah,
exactly. In between, you can do pick swaps and say you get the better of these two picks. So I haven't heard much about this, about you saying they're trying to stop the trading they're trying to do away with that. Because, I mean, hey, the Brooklyn trade was what? We're talking 6 years ago?
Yeah. And people did think they won that trade right off the bat. So, that was really just incredible circumstances. Like, even Boston's probably stunned that turned out the way it did.
Absolutely. So, I mean, I think that was a scenario where everything kind of went the way, a perfect storm scenario. And no matter what, yeah, whatever. Let's get back to the game.
I'm sure the Scotsman's going to pull it in. So we'll talk to him right now. Mike Munger, the Scotsman, is on the air with us. Hello, Mike.
Hey, what up, fellas? How are you?
Hey, yo.
Fantastic.
Hey, so first off, listen, it is always a fantastic day when you beat LeBron and any team that he's on. But to beat them in an embarrassing fashion like that, it's kind of it's almost like a weird eroticism thing for the hardcore Celtics fans.
And Munger,
you know,
they called a travel on LeBron. Could you believe that?
I actually started to get a little lightheaded and dizzy when they did that. But in true LeBron fashion, he did the stupid throw his hands up, that stupid LeBron face that he does. You know, he's such an aggravating pissant every time he doesn't get his way. But the best thing about this was every time you kind of got that sense like, all right, this is when Cleveland makes their run. The Celtics stymied it real fast. They would hit a big shot. You know, they would make a big defensive stop. So even if it got to like 14, I think when Jeff Green hit the shot at the end of the third quarter off like the fumbled rebound between Shemi A and Marcus Smart, that put it to 14.
Absolutely.
And then the Celtics just, they answered. They came out in the fourth quarter and they didn't let them – get back into it. So that was a good thing. That shows poise, even for a younger team. I think that shows a lot of poise. It just shows a lot of confidence in themselves. And I just think that, just the way that the Celtics play, they just played a good style of basketball tonight. They played physical when they had to. They played, they were very intelligent. They didn't make too many, self-inflicted wounds tonight. I'll admit we were lucky in the first quarter because I think Korver missed a couple wide open threes. I think J.R. Smith missed a wide open three. So I don't necessarily think that's going to happen all series, but we took advantage of the misses that they had, and I just thought that it was this was one of those ones where every Cavs fan, the Nick Wrights of the world, the Shannon Sharps, the slobbers, they're going to sit there and try and make every single excuse that they have, as opposed to giving the Celtics credit, because the Celtics went out there, they put the smackdown on them, and all you're going to hear tomorrow is, well, it's only one game. Well, LeBron's right. He likes to feel the series out. Now he's going to turn it on, so. You know what's coming.
Scotty, isn't that exactly what they did after the Boston Celtics, gave the Philadelphia 76ers the gentleman's sweep? Is that the Philadelphia 76ers had this series in their grasp and let it slip away? Like, no, they didn't.
No,
when you lose four games to one, that's not having the series in your grasp. No credit to the Celtics.
They went through, and Embiid's not as good as we thought. Simmons is not as good as we thought.
Brett Brown.
Philly just doesn't have enough two-way players. So, yeah, no credit to the boss.
The goalpost always moves.
Else.
Yeah.
Obviously. And that's when I started hearing, can we stop saying they're undermanned? Look how good Tatum and Jason. But guess what?
Yeah.
Before the series, these guys aren't ready. These guys aren't good enough. So, yeah, it's funny. Without even saying, we were wrong, it's, of course this is happening now. Because, look, the funniest one to me? Hey, Tatum and Brown are top three picks. Al Horford is a max player, is an all-star. Of course they're playing this. Oh, yeah, but you killed him before. You've been killing Al Horford all year, and now all of a sudden it's, of course he is. Get out of my face, man.
No, I agree, and it's frustrating because, in the first round, the Bucks were the favorite. In the second round, the Sixers were the favorite. In the Eastern Conference Finals, a little bit more understandable, but the Cavs are the favorite, and the Celtics just keep coming out here. They have the best coach in the NBA. All due respect to Greg Popovich. Brad Stevens right now, as of today, is the best coach in the NBA. They have a guy who doesn't get enough credit, in my opinion, in Al Horford, who People want to bash this guy because of the contract that he signs. What was he supposed to do? Turn it down? You know, people forget he was the second best free agent in that class outside of Kevin Durant.
Think about how many teams were all over him. Washington was thrilled with him. Houston almost got him. Houston almost threw him into the mix with Harden and those guys there, and he was going to be a big part of that core there. Like, think about how good that Houston machine would be now without Horford in the mix. So if you weren't paying Horford that, you weren't getting him that summer. That's a great point.
Yeah, and I think if you don't pay Horford, I think it's harder. It's a harder sell to try and get Hayward here, and I think it's a harder sell to try and convince Kyrie to stay or convince Kyrie about the Celtic way of doing things.
People forget.
Well, yeah, I mean, Durant actually came and he gave us a visit. Like, I don't think Durant was going to give too many teams visits. You know, Horford being here got Durant here to at least listen to the sales pitch.
I think we all agree that Al Horford is probably, even now that he's getting props. You know, he's getting props now because he's playing really well. But, you know, once the spotlight goes away, Phil kind of probably one of the most underrated stars in the NBA. He literally has no holes in his game as far as, you know, almost every other star, all-star has something that you say, all right, if he worked on this. Al is a great defender on the perimeter, interior. He can post. He can hit the jump shot. He's a smart decision maker. He's one of those guys, man. I call him the offensive lubricant because, sure, Kyrie might be the best one-on-one scorer on the team. Kyrie is the best one-on-one scorer on the team and, you know, is the offensive star. But Al makes it. Al is the backbone. Everything kind of runs through Al, and he makes it better and easier for everybody else. So that kid, that man, he's incredible. He's incredible.
Listen, if you can rebound and then run the break and then find, you know, make the solid passes like Al Horford did today. I mean, I think he had like 4 or 5 assists today, even more. I mean, that's so critical. It's the foresight of Danny Ainge to put a team together like this that's so, you know, so versatile at every position. Like, Terry Rozier rebounds for a point guard, you know what I'm saying? Al Horford gets assists for a center. He can run the break for a center. Even Jason Tatum has been bringing the ball up on occasion. And then you have Marcus Smart, who, of course, is, you know, a Swiss Army knife, you know what I'm saying, a jack of all trades. He can give you anything in the stat book, in the stat sheet, on any given night. I mean, this, you know, that versatility that Al Horford brings, the ability to pass, the ability to keep, like you said, that's the lubricant to me, is that on so many nights, and I don't even know if the average was Al Horford or Kyrie Irving, but I know Al Horford was in the top 2 in assists for this team and has probably been leading. I think Terry Rozier has been leading the team in assists in the playoffs, but Al Horford isn't too far behind with that, and I think that's one of the incredible things about Al Horford that you can't overlook. Plus, he's playoff Al. He stepped his game up in the playoffs. That's when you want him to step his game up. It's the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's so funny. Like, there's two athletes I like to try. Like, when you look at Al Horford, well, as far as comparing to a former player, Al Horford is what every Celtics fan wished that Antoine Walker could be or would have been, and he reminds me so much of a guy like, you know, without the, I don't say like Hall of Famer, but he kind of reminds me of a Derek Jeter, where he's never considered the best in the league. He, you know, he was a good, you know, a good team Yankee kind of guy, but he never like really got the credit that some of the other guys at his position did. But when it really came down to it, he was the guy out there making the play that you needed. You know, he was the hustle guy. He would do whatever it took for his team to at least have a chance to win. And that's why I love Al Horford. I hope he stays. I hope like he finishes out his career in Boston. I think that, you know, he realized, listen, I made my money. I can stick around with something special. I could be a you know, key component on a multiple-time champion here. I just think that I think it's about time that he gets the national credit he deserves. I think it's about time that we get the national credit we deserve. And as my, you know, my traditional out guys, I still hate the refs. I don't, you know, the refs weren't even that bad today, but I can nitpick a few things about them that I despise. I still don't even like David Stern. The guy's been retired for years. David Stern sucks. The ref sucks. But, guys, the Celtics beat LeBron. Go Celtics.
Hey. Thanks, Munger. Good to hear from you. And I'm sure we'll hear from you again as the refs get a little more involved with this series, which I'm sure is going to happen in one of the games down the line. I don't think the refs are going to get off easy on the postgame show in this game. They do today. Didn't touch the Celtics all that much, but I'm sure there'll be a few angry rants by the time this series is done. We have 6 minutes left. I do want to hit on Horford real quick because comparison to Jeter right there. I think it's interesting. You know, people don't care about it, but Horford won 2 national championships in college, and that impresses me because you win one, it's the tournament, whatever, stuff happened. You win 2, there's something there. Like, and he was the center of those Florida teams. He ends up in Atlanta, and Atlanta put some decent teams around him. They had a few good runs there, and then they were the one seed that one year where they were an obvious disappointment. But people talk all the time, what if Durant ends up in Boston in that 07 draft, which is obviously something you look back at and say, wow, what if Durant ends up here? What if the Celtics got Horford in that draft? That's something I wonder about, because you throw Horford in the mix there with what they had, Paul Pierce. Obviously, you don't end up getting Ray Allen at that point, so who knows if you get Garnett. But Horford's career goes a lot differently if he ends up in Boston, I think.
Absolutely. But, I mean, it's all the butterfly effect. Like you said, then everything else goes differently too, so it's no point even, you know, does Boston win in 2008 if they don't get Garnett and do it? You know, so that's fine. It all worked out the way it's supposed to. Right?
Mm-hmm. I just wonder, because, I mean, it's too bad we got Horford at this point in his career, because we remember early in his career, he was actually like a machine.
No, it's not. It's not. Because, again, you said it. If he comes earlier, does everything else play out the way it did? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's like, tough to argue against 08. It is.
Right. So
you got a championship out of what you had. I mean, you can't really complain. I mean, and there should have been more. I think 2012 was one of the biggest robberies in NBA history. But you got at least one championship out of what you had. How can you complain? It would be nice. It's nice to theorize, but you know, Al Horford, you know, right now is key. Is clutch.
That's,
I think,
fine.
Al Horford.
Yeah. No, I'll take
he's
it.
Been, he's
I'll
been the constant force. He hasn't led everybody and everything. He hasn't been the sensational story that Scary Terry was in the first series, or that Jason Tatum and his 7-game 20-plus points in a row for a rookie was in the second, you know, in the second series. But he's been the constant force for the Boston Celtics on both sides of the ball. That I think you have to give him credit.
I'm trying to make Horford more exciting, I guess, to the national audience, and I'm trying hard,
yeah,
because
I think part of his brand is Uncle Al, right? He's that calming under, like the whole team says it. We all look to Al when things go, you know, he's a stabilizer. So that's part of his brand. There's nothing exciting about him, and that's okay. You know why it's okay? It's because after like he kicks the butt of Embiid, you know. We can look back and find those old tweets when everybody was killing Al Horford from Philly, and we could say, how about now? What are you saying now? And you watch everybody try to walk it back. So it's all right, man. I love the fact that he's under the radar.
What?
He just does his thing. But then, you know what he does? Like that huge dunk he had at the end of that Philly game. Every now and then he reminds you, I'm an NBA All-Star. So I love that guy.
We're gonna
the
hear
best
from
part
Mike
of his brand is Anna Horford, who has a fantastic show on CLNS Media, by the
oh,
way.
Yeah.
Anna Horford, the best part of the Al Horford brand.
No, Snotty was on that show, which you should check out. Good episode there. I listened to that one. We're going to talk to Mike Petralia right now. After, I'm going to ask you guys who the X Factor of the game was tonight. This is him on the line right now from TD Garden. CLNS Media is Mike Petralia. Trags, hello.
Bobby, how are you doing?
I'll ask you, Mike, who was the X Factor
yes.
today in this game?
That's a great question. I'm going to go I think I'm going to go with Semi Ojeleye, and I'll tell you why. I thought in 15 and a half minutes, he came off the bench and helped with defense on LeBron. After the game, Al Horford, Marcus Morris, and Brad Stevens all said it's not going to be one or two guys even that is going to help contain LeBron James and keep him from dictating the pace of these games. It's going to be a complete team effort. And I thought Semi Ojeleye, in his time off the bench, leading the first unit, second unit, I should say, I thought he provided some valuable defense. Didn't do really much offensively, but, he's the kind of guy that you're going to need in a series like this, who's not overly concerned about his offense, but can get it done on defense.
I like it.
What was LeBron there saying after the game? I saw a few quotes leak out from him after there, but one of the things we've been wondering here tonight is where Cleveland goes from here, what adjustments they make.
Okay, so LeBron said that clearly they're going to have to make some adjustments, but he's not concerned about that. Asked about his level of concern, I have zero level of concern for our ability to come back in game two and play a better game. He said that the Celtics deserve full marks for what they were able to do, make him feel uncomfortable. That's one of the quotes that I thought, guys, LeBron had to say after the game that stuck out to me. It's very rare that an opposing team is able to make LeBron feel uncomfortable. And he acknowledged as much. He said, they, with their defensive looks and their switches and their help, made me feel uncomfortable. So there's a lot to work on for game number two.
That's incredible.
Nick Sesento. Sesento. I mean, Snotty, actually. You got any questions for Mike?
No, I just want to comment how incredible that is, because we've seen LeBron go through the playoff crucible for the last 15 years and counting, and he even commented on how Dwayne Casey was the reason that he kind of came to the way he was. And you know, that's why he added so much to his game, because he basically made him uncomfortable against the Dallas Mavericks back in 2011. And we've seen LeBron display everything in this playoffs where I thought it wasn't really possible to put him in positions of making him uncomfortable. So that's a remarkable testament to Brad Stevens.
Well, and I also think, to your point, LeBron, there aren't many coaches in the NBA that LeBron has more respect for than Brad Stevens. And the two were even joking early in this game when LeBron was looking for a call and Brad was kind of joking with him, I think, going into the first or second time out of the game. And so, look, I mean, there's a mutual respect there, and that is saying something, considering it's LeBron James and it's Brad Stevens, who is, you know, just in his fifth year as head coach of the Celtics, has very rapidly, I think, as everybody knows, and has been very well documented, has risen up the coaching ladder quickly. And I think LeBron respects Brad Stevens right up there with Greg Popovich. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And with Steve Kerr, I think, you know, it's one thing to have the talent, but it's another to put that talent in a position to, you know, adjust from game to game the way Stevens has. And LeBron can see that, and I give credit to LeBron for recognizing that.
Treggs is over on clnsmedia.com. You'll be able to read him, everything he had to say after game one, and the Garden Report, of course, with Josue Pavone and others, available on the CLNS Media YouTube page. Last thing, Treggs, a lot of people brought up the stat, 1-15, Al Horford in his career against LeBron. This has been a tough matchup for him, but he looked loose, free as ever today. Started 6-6. It was just getting into Kevin Love. He looked as comfortable as he did against any other opponent, and this has been a tough one for him in the past. What was different for him tonight or today?
I think the help that he had defensively on LeBron and his ability to putting Marcus Morris in the starting lineup allowed Al Horford to be a little bit more free defensively and roam. Certainly he had his moments where he had to contain LeBron and in certain switching situations out there on the court. But I thought Al Horford, to your point, looked very free and easy on defense. I thought maybe I should change from Semi Ojeleye to Al Horford for the X factor, even though it's hard to consider a guy who had 20 points on 8 of 10 shooting and 6 assists as an X factor. But Al Horford's ability to play up and down on both ends of the court, to me, he was a star of the game. I know what the box score says, the 23 points of Jaylen Brown and the 21 points and 10 rebounds from Marcus Morris, but Al Horford was just all over the place, and I thought he was probably your player of the game.
Absolutely. Sesento, you got anything?
I was just going to ask Petrelia what he thinks the Boston Celtics can do heading into game two after beating down LeBron James, or as Isaiah would say, dragging LeBron James and the Cavaliers in game one. What can the Boston Celtics do to not get ahead of themselves and to keep themselves grounded and hungry to do the same thing and take care of business in game two?
I think they will stay grounded. I mean, there's nothing I've ever seen from a Brad Stevens coach team that would lead me to believe they're going to get full of themselves. They just know who the opponent is. And in that regard, Stevens is a lot like Bill Belichick. He's going to remind his team for the next 48 hours of who they're playing. And so I don't think there's any concern about that. What I do think they should be prepared for is for the Cavaliers starting to knock down the open shots. And when they do, don't hang their heads defensively and, you know, keep up the defensive intensity, even when the Cleveland shots are going down, which I think inevitably they will.
Treggs, always a pleasure. Thanks for taking a few minutes. I know things are probably crazy down there at the Garden, but always a blast to talk to you here. Hopefully we'll hear from you later in this series. Thank you.
Bobby, I'm glad we could catch up. Take care, guys.
Bye, man.
That's Mike Petrella down there at the Garden. Good to hear from him. Let's round it out with this, guys. Hour and a half. Great show. Great stuff tonight. Callers, guests. We had it all for the East Finals. We're stepping up our A game here. X factors from you guys, Snotty.
I wanted to say Terry Rozier because he did a great job. By less is more. His shot wasn't really strong. He was only 4 for 10. Well, he was only 4 for 10, but he played a really good floor game today, I think. And I think defensively, you know, I wanted to say him, but I'm going to say Jason Tatum. 16 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, and a block. And even though, again, I really feel like that the Cavs prioritized him and try to, you know, limit his shots. He only took 11 shots, but he still was obviously very efficient. You know, he made 6 of them, 2 for 5 from 3. And I really feel like defensively he had a large overall game impact. So Al Horford might have been the star of this game. Jaylen Brown was the leading scorer. I think Tatum was my X factor because he didn't force the action, right? In the last round, they needed him to score a lot. But he recognized how things were going, and he kind of just – he was fine just taking a step back, not forcing the action. But then, even when they needed him to step up a couple of times and just take his man, he's developing a sense of the moment, right? Like the shot over J.R. Smith when he scored on Tristan Thompson. Like he recognizes when to pick his spots and when the team really needs him. And he was a team high, plus 27.
And
I know.
Remember that shot he hit before half too? Like he timed it out perfectly. Got in isolation, went to the baseline, and like right as the shot clock expired, he let it go.
That kid's special, man. He's gonna be like the fact that again he didn't lead the team in scoring, but the amount of attention paid to him opened things up for everybody else. And like this is year one, man. So yeah, I'm gonna give him my X factor.
Jacinto, who's yours?
Got to be Marcus Morris. I mean, 21 points, 10 rebounds, very efficient, 7 for 12 shooting from the field, 3 for 4 from 3, hit 4 or 5 of his free throws, plus 25, which was second best on the team behind Snotty Drippin's man, Jason Tatum. You know, can't go wrong with Marcus Morris, especially after the terrible series that he had against Philadelphia, to then be inserted into the lineup, especially under the pressure of the statements that we talked about earlier that kind of got exploded on Twitter about being able to stay in front of LeBron James and actually step up and do what he said he was going to do. Got to give it to Marcus Morris. And also, just wanted to give it to the ABC graphics guys who couldn't seem to get the freaking score right the entire game. I mean, they were giving points to Cleveland and then subtracting them. I mean, did anyone else notice that but me? I thought I was a little bit too high.
But the score was like kind of inconsequential for most of the night, so I wasn't peeking
That's
at it too much. I will say, though, I'm going to back you up on the Morris point. There was one point in this game where it was in doubt, where Cleveland got within 14 right before the half, got a few offensive rebounds, pushed a 5-point swing, and Morris came out of the half and just gunned it, brought it right to the paint, got his own rebound and threw it back down, had a few nice plays, saved the ball around that point, and pushed that little 7-0 run that got them back up to 20 and pretty much made LeBron pack it in for the rest of the night. So beyond his defensive efforts against LeBron, he was he had a very nice, efficient, in control night, and early on he was going to the rim, and you don't expect him to ever give up the ball down there, but he dished a little nice dump off on the way to the rim there to Horford early on in this one too. So he was focused, ready to go. And I'll go back to that statement again that he had about LeBron and just saying he was the guy to stand in front of him. I don't think he probably didn't know how big of a deal that statement would become online, but I love this team being audibly confident. And Stephen A. Smith, talking about this series too, said he was in the locker room second round, and after they beat Philadelphia, there were just guys everywhere saying they're not bowing down to the king, they're not worried about this series, they're not scared of it. Jaylen Brown, especially in that capacity, kept saying, you know, we're not worried about this guy at all. Now, he said that last year, and that turned into something ugly, but I just love how this team has no fear. We talked about that a lot tonight, and just how different it is from the way Toronto approached this. So,
what's a king to a god?
Yeah, we'll wrap it up there. Snotty Drippin, Nick Jacinto. I'm Bobby Manning. Great calls today. Nice guest spot from Mike Petrella. We'll see you guys after game 2, which is on Tuesday at 8:30 in Boston. I believe that's it, yeah. So night games the rest of the way. This is our lone afternoon show for the series, which I'm fine with. I'm a late night kind of guy. Snotty, of course, is out there on the West Coast, so that's not going to bother him too much as we keep talking to you here. But Thank you all. Thank you, Nick. Thank you, Snotty. And we will see you on Tuesday. Good night.
Hey.
Hey.
This has been the Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com. Thanks for listening. The Celtics might not be in action every day, but we are, so stay connected. Follow us on Twitter at CLNS Radio and check out our broadcast schedule for the best weekly sports podcasts on the web.